new cardinals, 10 of which will be cardinal electors, and this brings Pope Francis to over 50% of cardinals electors appointed by him. We talked about this in a previous episode here on the Taylor Marshall show on the channel, and we said that the next consistory is going to hit it. Well, he just announced it, and he hits those numbers today to discuss who these new cardinals are and the ramifications of what this means for the future of the Catholic Church, in particular, who will be the next pope after Pope Francis. I'm joined today with Timothy Gordon. Tim, how are you?
I'm great.
Lots going on in your life, man. New baby?
New baby, new cardinals. I can't tell which is the bigger deal, you know? 10 new electing level cardinals, 3 emeritus cardinals being elected, and 1 baby. So, yeah.
Well, how is Gordon baby? Little Miriam.
Gordon baby she's well. She's tiny. She came out a small human. So just what we were expecting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, she's good.
Good. Miriam Josephine, is that right?
Yeah. Miriam Josephine Gordon. Yeah, awesome. She's a cute little baby. Yeah, thank you for
great.
Asking.
Yeah, she looks great.
And thank
great.
You everyone for their prayers. Thank you, friend, for your prayers. You forget how hardcore a C-section is until you get in there. One of the babies, I made the mistake of kind of looking beyond the curtain, the little curtain they put
don't
up.
Don't look beyond the curtain, man.
Ooh, no, it's Wizard of Oz, bro. Yeah, you don't. It's hardcore, and it's a real surgery. I mean, it sounds so commonplace that you think, oh, you know, it's a little more intense than a live birth, but it is. It was very biological when I looked over there, and it's horrifying. You know, this is your best friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, my best friend, my wife. It's one's best friend when your husband and your wife is getting C-section. So don't do it, people.
Yeah, my wife Joy has had 8 babies. Baby, all of them natural except baby 8 with C-section. And I was pretty used to the normal births. And then they went in for the C-section, and I was talking with Joy, and I looked away, and I looked beyond the curtain, and Joy said, I went white. She said, look back at me, look at my eyes, and I'll never forget what I saw beyond that curtain.
Oh, I didn't know you'd done that too. No, you can't unsee that stuff.
Yeah, God bless these women.
We never talked about that. Yeah, yeah. It's like as involved as
amazing.
An open heart surgery.
It's just
not that.
Except there's another person there coming out.
Right.
You know, on the Saints, on the calendar, I'm pretty much only following the old calendar now. I forgot that. But on the old calendar, I don't know if it was on the new, Saint, I think it's Raymond Nonnatus. And he's called Nonnatus because he was not born. He was C-sectioned.
Ah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Raymond
that makes
Nonnatus. All right. Well, let's get into these cardinals. Let's do our prayer. And maybe we can all sort of join this prayer in particular for Steph and the new baby, Miriam. Everybody's at home, right? Everybody's healthy.
Everyone's home. We're all here.
Awesome. Okay. Here's our prayer. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Pater Noster, qui es in Caelis, sanctificetur nomen Tuum, adveniat regnum Tuum, fiat voluntas Tua, sicut in cielo et in terra. Panem nostrum quotidianum da nobis hodie, et imite nobis debita nostra. Sicut et nos dimittimus debitoribus nostris, et ne nos inducas in tentationem, sed libera nos al malo. Amen. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. All right, before we get started, I just want to remind everyone that our fall enrollment for the new St. Thomas Institute is firing up a week from today, and there are already several hundred people on that waiting list. It looks like as of now, probably all of them will get on there, but there is limited space. So if you want to join the new St. Thomas Institute online courses with yours truly, me, and in January, we'll be starting our history of the Roman Rite. We'll be studying the Latin Mass, the calendar, the formation of the Mass, all 7 sacraments, everything from the apostles all the way up to our present day on through Vatican II in comparison with old and new. So if you're interested in that, please get on the priority waiting list, and you can do that at newstthomas.com. newstthomas.com. All right, 13 new Cardinals. This brings it to 52%, Tim. I did the math, carried the one, figured it out.
Yeah.
Now, it takes people, maybe people don't know, it takes two-thirds majority to elect a pope. So, you know, you need 67% to do it. But remember, the previous cardinals who are already in the mix, they're the ones who elected Francis. So, right. Barring a miracle or divine intervention or Fatima II or who knows what, war, there'll be a Francis II, Francis 2.0, John Paul III, Paul VII, something like that, I think is going to happen in the next conclave.
Yeah, so it's clear, 52% you're saying have now been elected by Pope Francis of the electing cardinals.
Yeah, so 52%. So it used to be that the cardinals were from numbered anywhere from like 12, like the apostles, or 70, like the 70 judges that helped Moses. This was expanded by Paul VI. It's all in my book, Infiltration, if you want the history of how the cardinal system was greatly modified and changed by Paul VI. And so now there's 120 electors. That's the limit. But Francis will have us at 128. So he's pushed, which has happened before, but he's raised the roof. He's pushed it up to 128. And some of these, you know, cardinal electors, once they turn 80, they fall out. They're not voting anymore, which was another serious reform of Paul VI. Old cardinals can't vote is a Paul VI right. thing.
Right. Yeah, it's a strange kind of statement that's testified to by the notion of over 80 not being able to vote. You know, I mean, what are you saying, that they're senile? But especially in light of the fact that Pope Francis is elevating 3 of 13. I think that's about the typical proportion he's done. He's elevating 1/5 roughly of his cardinals over 80. So, I mean, if the point of the 80 year rule, the 80 year limit, is that, you know, these cardinals for all intents and purposes are obsolete, well, then why elevate willingly cardinals over 80%? This has to be said at least once at the beginning of this thing. It's really odd.
Well, it's something that deeply troubles me because it goes back to Paul VI. And if you remember, or if you've read Infiltration, folks, you'll see that from the time of the institution of the College of Cardinals until Paul VI, it was appointment to life. It was like Supreme Court judges, right? They're on the bench. It's like, you're voting, you're in. It's a grave office. It's a grave responsibility. Well, Paul VI said anyone who's over 80 can't vote. So that what that did is it got rid of all the Pius XII cardinals.
Right.
So it ensured that after Paul VI died, you would not have any arch conservatives turning back the clock. That's effectively, now we could argue what his intention was, but effectively the new rule by Paul VI saying all cardinals over 80, it just lopped the heads off of all the older Pius XII cardinals who were the more conservative cardinals, pre-conciliar, pre-Vatican II cardinals. They lost their vote by fiat. And that rule has stayed in. So what it effectively does is by barring cardinals over 80 from voting, it makes sure that the cardinals of your predecessors lose their voice. So yeah. it's removing continuity between one pontiff to the next. And we're seeing that right here. I mean, if this rule wasn't in effect, then cardinals appointed by John Paul and Benedict XVI would still be voting. But as they reach that level of 80, boom, they're off. They're not voters. And then you have this oddity where even still they're nominating or naming men as cardinals who are over 80. It's just honorific. They'll never vote. But we need to remember, by becoming a cardinal, even if you don't vote, you still have immense power and influence. You're in the club. So these three older gentlemen who are above 80 that Pope Francis has appointed as cardinals, yes, they won't vote in the next one, but they're going to wear the red hat. Wherever they are in the world, their esteem goes up, and they're now interconnected with the most powerful institution, the church, under the Pope.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, remember, though, if the thesis is that you buy into and largely I buy into as well, is that a regime change kind of took place between Pius the 12th and John the 23rd, and then eventually Paul the 6th, then the over 80 rule cuts considerably less ice thereafter, right? I mean, the real amount of work being done would have been right between the ancien regime or whatever and the new regime coming in and taking power. I don't want to speak for you, but if the assumption is that these popes now from around the council onward all or mostly are of a same piece, right? Then it's interesting that the rule of 80 years continues to be in place, because the real obsolescence was intended to happen just, you know, at the beginning of the change of regimes. I mean, at this point, does Francis really want all of his cardinal electors to be obsolete, assuming that the next guy is Francis II? They will be, but that's more like an unintended consequence, probably, of the rule. It seems that you postulate in infiltration, and what you've talked about here, is that when Paul VI made this rule, it was with the express purpose of, you know, it was a one-and-done deal.
I think Paul VI wanted it to remain in perpetuity. I think if you're a progressive-minded pope and modernism is the modus operandi, in other words, the church must always be updating her theology, her terms, her liturgy, everything must be afresh in every age. By the way, happy feast day of St. Pius X. Big day. Yes. May he pray for us. One of the things Pius X said is modernists always want to update the faith in not only in its presentation and its liturgy, but also in its dogma. So if that's the case, if you really do buy in and believe that thesis, you want the papacy and the cardinals to turn over as fast as they can every generation. Right? You want fresh faces. If you really believe in modernism, you want fresh faces. And I think if, you know, in America, if you were a real progressive, you wouldn't want death term limits on the Supreme Court. You'd want to just keep churning it, because instability brings about progress in their mind. So I think that, you know, it's with the Second Vatican Council and an openness to re-articulating the Catholic faith and reforming all the liturgy, I think Paul VI intended it for it to stay, and I think Pope Francis wants it to stay. I don't think he's going to say, okay, now that I've got, at a certain point, because now that I have 70% of the College of Cardinals, I'm now turning off the switch and you can vote till death beyond 80.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Because the nature of, not to make a crass analogy to politics, but the nature of ideas, you know, as Plato showed us, is dialogic. So what it could do, I guess, at some point is, I mean, like you said, there's no real pope that's put in a bunch of electors that will save us from a presumptive Francis II or something like that. I mean, some of Benedict's nominees are decent, but it's not all of them. And they're falling by the wayside now because of the 80 rule. But what could happen, because of the dialogic nature of this stuff, is you expect to see kind of wobble back and forth. And yeah, so that I guess leaves room for hope. at some point you would have to have a bunch of at least decent cardinals in there that would elect a decent guy pope. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird because we're talking about regime change and all this stuff. These are political terms, right?
Right.
But no one really knows, unless there's some Saint Gallen Mafia part two, no one really knows, okay, do these guys have someone in mind for whatever, 4 or 7 or whatever, you know, 10 years down the pike, however long it is until the next papal conclave. I kind of start thinking they do. You know, I mean, after what Saint Gallen Mafia showed us, that they were talking about a Bergoglio way far back. I wonder who these guys, hey, you're a new cardinal. Who do you have in mind?
I think they do, but they so overplayed their hand. And there's been so much media attention to Saint Gallen Mafia and all that. They realize they can't play that way anymore. Also, the times have changed, Tim. I mean, it used to be that if you wanted to have a private secret meeting, you had to go to a location. Now, right, you can just get on some encrypted chats with people. The technology is different. You know, there might be some encrypted WhatsApp conversation going on between 50 cardinals or something more advanced, yeah, than that, Signal or whatever. And they can talk. They're not going to go and fly to a meeting and broadcast that. That's my guess.
Well, I thought that all along. I thought that's kind of weird that you have to, these guys go all the way to like Saint Gallen just to get a private meeting. I mean, go read Father Elijah. Just go meet in the catacombs of Rome or something. Even if, and they're old school anyway. I don't
all
even
those
know
tourists
these guys
down there. There's all those tourists down in the catacombs, though. You know,
yeah,
pilgrims.
Yeah, find a. Like,
why are there 30? Why are there 30 cardinals down in this catacomb talking by candlelight? It's weird.
Yeah, we don't know what that means, but it's not good. We do know. Yeah, I just don't know if these cardinals know to avail themselves of the technology, which would save them a flight. But there's lots of it out there, guys.
I don't know. Maybe
one thing that's strange in all this is not the elections or the nominations made by Francis, but the failures of nominations in famous, there was not one American, mm-hmm, right? And all LA. Of the traditional sees, right, headed by a red hat. You got LA, Philadelphia, Turin that were neglected. I think Venice. It's like, what is he saying by who he elected? And what is he saying by who he did not elect? You mm-hmm always feel like Francis is making a point.
Yeah.
Because he likes to make points.
Yeah.
What do you think he's saying with that?
Well, yeah, he. If from what we know from the Vigano letter, Francis does not like Chaput, so
yeah,
get rid of that's Philadelphia, which is a traditional cardinal seat. But sure, also Philadelphia has been plagued with so much scandal,
right?
You know, maybe it's just like you guys are in timeout. That's how you can read it. L.A. also plagued with tons of scandal, and you have Gomez. Everyone said, oh, Gomez, he's Opus Dei, he's going to be so conservative. Has been a huge disappointment. Anyone will tell you that.
Yeah.
Hardly anything has changed there. Vocations, you know, they've got that religious ed conference was just living nightmare.
I know.
Every year it gets worse. it doesn't ever tone down. People just ratchet it up.
Why does he let that happen?
You got LMNOP agenda just everywhere over there. It's a big mess, but yeah, Mahoney still reigns supreme there in the shadows. So that's why that was Turin. I don't know these other places. I don't know. I just know the American context. So, and also right. I doubt there'll be many more, if any more American cardinals, you know, he chose like, you know, Tobin of Newark, not New York, but Newark. Very, right, very unusual, right? To choose the New Jersey Sea. So,
right,
yeah, well, I mean, we'll wait and see. But he's definitely, in this last one, he's chosen some people from the, what they call the periphery, you know? Three Jesuits were chosen in this round of 13. That.
Yeah.
Three Jesuits, and we'll go through these. We'll go through most of the big names here. We'll run through them.
Jesuits looking out for Jesuits.
Yeah.
Right. back your boys in blue.
They like the Jesuits.
Wear blue.
So yeah. On the screen there, people can see those are the 13. Wrong end. There we go. There's the 13 right there. maybe we should just run through some of these. The one that I'm most concerned about is Zuppi.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some other ones on here, but for me, we got Archbishop Matteo Zuppi. And what kind of breaks my heart even more, it's like the twist of the knife, is that Archbishop Zuppi is the successor of Cardinal Caffara.
I know.
That's why I'm drinking from this.
I know.
Dubia Brothers mug in memory of the four.
Right. It'd be like replacing, you know, the late great Antonin Scalia with, some far, far SJW leftist. Right. You know, if Sotomayor had taken in Nino Scalia's place on the bench, it's not just the stab to the heart, it's the twist at the end, you know? I mean, it's really painful.
Yeah, it is. It's a tragedy. So Zuppi is known as the street priest for reaching out to the elderly, immigrant, and gypsies.
Gotta change that nickname these days.
Yeah, street priests may not. Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe it could open some doors for you in Rome.
Right.
And he's like Francis, you know, he likes to ride around on a bicycle and be seen with the people. You know, he's not in a Mercedes Benz or anything like that. He's on his bike. Maybe he'll have to get a moped now that he's going to have a red, you know, Cardinals cassock.
Right.
To get the
do
moped.
The right thing.
Yeah.
But Vespa. You mean a Vespa.
A Vespa.
If you go to Rome, you're riding around in a Vespa. Yeah, like Gregory Peck, Roman Holiday.
Yeah. And he can get like a red helmet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Cardinal.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there goes the Cardinal.
There you go.
So
I lived in Italy, a little known fact, I got hit by a Vespa.
Did you really?
I was walking on Via.
Dude, you know what? Gregorio. That was a San Gallo Mafia, dude. I'm serious. No,
yeah, they.
Just get me on Twitter. Marshall says San Gallo Mafia attacked Tim Gordon. Just kidding, people.
No, I was going to the Greg. I was it was kind of my fault. I was
cutting
around
to the Greg.
A bus.
That's what happens, man.
I was heading from the Angelicum to the Greg, you know, very, very, very close together, right down Via Gregorio there. And there's a bus here, and I didn't want to wait. And being having a bit, you know, Italian myself, they don't wait in line. I cut around the bus, the exact stupid way to cut around the bus. In a blind corner, a dude hit me, and I like spun in the air. He flew off the Vespa. I landed on my feet. It was kind of action movie. But
really,
papers flew everywhere.
Tom Cruise, yeah.
Yeah. He had to, anyway, so it was just, you know, a couple hundred yards from the Greg. So maybe he'd been sent on a mission.
Yeah.
But Vespa's,
you need to work that story. And then he walked over and helped me up. And when he took off his helmet, it was Archbishop Vigano or something.
Yeah. That would make it actually a good story. I probably didn't need to share it here because it wasn't him. But
yeah.
No, but the cool part, get it straight, is
okay.
I helped him up.
I literally did
like a varial body varial thing in the air, and I landed on my feet, and I went over and I knocked all his papers over, and I still have shoulder problems. He hit me in the shoulder hard, seriously.
And does that wound stay with you to this day?
Yeah, it's like, you know, the anniversary of Frodo being stabbed on Weathertop.
Exactly.
You know, on the anniversary of that is actually a late May day. It's my left shoulder. I have a lot of arthritis in it because
when the pressure changes, you can feel it. Like,
my
Vespa shoulder.
The ring wraith. It was a ring wraith.
It was the ring wraith, man. Sunk on ring wraith.
Yeah.
They're like, we feel that one day this guy might expose our work. Take him out.
Yeah. Get him while he's naive.
Well, anyway, soon to be Cardinal Zuppi, he might be zooping around on his Vespa. Look out in Rome.
Zooping.
But the biggest thing about Zuppi is that he wrote the Italian preface for the Italian version of James Slim Jim Martin's book, Building a Bridge, which is an LMNOP endorsement book all about opening up to LMNOP agenda. And he is a great supporter of Slim Jim Martin here in America.
So when people say that the establishment in power in Rome is not technically supportive of Slim Jim Martin, now there's more of a bridge built, as it were, as it happens. Yes. And we can say that because
pontificating.
I mean, some pontifical bridge. Yeah, exactly. Pontificus Maximus bridge between Slim Jim Martin and the actual power structure, the power that be. And, you know, you hear a lot of centrist places, you know, on the internet without naming any names. You know, you and I have run afoul of them, both of us in different ways the last couple months. But lots of the kind of militant moderates is what I like to call them, centrists on the internet will say, why are you guys so obsessed with James Martin? He's just a rogue. It's like, no, he's not a rogue. He's running around, he's globetrotting around the globe, and he's doing whatever he wants, saying whatever he wants, and it's open heresy. Everyone knows what he stands for, and it's with a tacit, silent nod of approval. And they always say, no, prove it. It's like, well, here's your proof, boys.
Yeah. Remember, Slim Jim Martin was speaking at that big meeting of families in Ireland when Francis was coming back, and it was the I Will Say No Word, and that, and then Vigano letter dropped. That whole event had Slim Jim Martin speaking at it, and that was a papal invite. Slim Jim Martin got a papal invite to speak at that.
That's right.
So it was the who's who of who's endorsed by the Vatican, and Slim Jim Martin was there. So Slim Jim Martin is not a rogue, people. Slim Jim is the future. If you've got an archbishop who wrote the foreword to Slim Jim's book,
yeah,
he's now a cardinal. He's voting on the new pope. He could be the new pope.
That's right. Yeah.
Maybe he'll be Pope James.
Pope Slim James the First.
Pope Slim James.
Yeah. It's troubling. It's very troubling.
Yeah.
I wonder if the average TNT viewers has heard that yet. Because this isn't the other troubling sort of place setting of this consistory of the cardinals is that it's, of course, consistories we say always lead to conclaves because the cardinals are voters, but now it's being done on the eve of the Amazonian Synod. Mm-hmm. So presumably these guys will be, the 13 new guys will be heightened in power to the extent that they're there. But, you know, what is it, October the 5th or October the 6th that they'll actually become cardinals at the consistory itself. And then later in the month, you have the perfect in time for the Halloween freak show. You have the Amazonian Synod. So they will be 13 cardinals new at the Amazonian Synod.
Right. Yeah, the consistory, I just rechecked, it's October 5th. So yep. These 13 will get red hats on October 5th. It really in conjunction, like you say, with the Amazonian Synod. And I'll be there. I'll be in Rome for the beginning of the Amazonian Synod. I'm doing that round table with John Henry Weston and Michael Matt from The Remnant and Michael Voris and Roberto De Mattei, and a bunch of us are doing a round table to talk about the Amazonian Synod. So we'll all be in Rome. And I believe there's a way to watch it on a live feed. And you got to check that out through, I think, LifeSite News. I think they're going to broadcast it. But we'll be in Rome. And I don't know, maybe we'll do a show from Rome, but.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you were going out there.
It's
going
to be great. Yeah, it's in it's October. Middle. It's 4th or 5th, I think. I don't know. I don't have it in front of me. October 4th. But yeah, a lot of us are doing this big round table.
Oh, for the consistory, too. So you'll be there for the consistory. Then.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't know it. But yeah, I will be there for the consistory. Yeah, so this will be my second time to be in Rome during a consistory. I don't know if I'm going to go to it. Probably
is it open? Huh? Is it even open to the public?
You have to get a ticket.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there it is. Okay, so that's Zuppi. And I'm concerned about that. I have a little concern.
Yep. as you should.
Now,
I mean, it's not strange.
Yeah.
Now everyone should be concerned. That's the TNT message for the day.
Yes.
This is not good. It's just more of the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the other one is the Spanish bishop, and I'm gonna murder the last name because I'm not familiar with it. X's in Spanish throw me for a loop here, but Miguel Ángel Ayuso Guijot, I'm guessing. How would you say that?
Yeah, I thought that that's right. I guess.
Guijot. Yeah, good enough for our show.
Guijo, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, I don't know how to say it. But the problem is this guy helped write the Abu Dhabi document, which we've been talking about last week, that Archbishop Athanasius Schneider, he's the hound dog. He just won't get off this trail.
No.
Because it says that God wills the diversity of religions. The Pope said, well, that was permissive will, but yet in that same thing, it has, for example, the division of the sexes, male and female. Go see our video last week on this debate. But the problem here is that Bishop Ayuso is a drafter for this document, which means he saw it before it went public. He saw that line that's theologically erroneous.
Right. Yeah, he might have been the one to write the line for all we know. And it's serious stuff. I think it's fair to say, in my preliminary glance or two through Guijot or whatever we're calling him and others, is that he represents the majority agenda of these 13 cardinals being elected today. It's actually this return, this revisitation of the Islam,
yes,
ecumenism, right? I mean, this is the big. Which is weird because it's like, oh, we're talking Islam, whether dialogue or violence. That sounds to me, feels to me like a Pope Benedict the 16th issue. I mean, this was a big, you know, remember when Pope Benedict did that dialogue, even the dialogue book with the Italian intellectual Marcello Pera. It was a good book. And this was an issue he was confronted with all the time, the Regensburg Address. Francis, for whatever reason, is choosing to make from, I would say, the sort of KT boundary of the Abu Dhabi document forward. He's choosing to make this, self-consciously making this, an issue of his pontificate.
He is.
I mean, look, as evidenced by this consistory.
Yeah. Yeah, this Abu Dhabi document, and also as we go through here, you'll see how many of these cardinal, I guess they're cardinal electors, do have involvement in Islamic Mohammedan ecumenism.
Yeah. Ecumaniacs.
It's part of it. So yeah, so he's been part of the drafting of that human fraternity document in which the Sheikh, the Mohammedan Sheikh, signed that this was supposed to bring together the two faiths. The Muslims just laughed all day as they drank tea. You know, what a joke. Let's see, anything else on him that we want to cut? Oh my goodness, the same guy.
Yeah.
He wrote the introduction to a book by Sister Maria Teresa Forcada.
Yeah.
Who's known for promoting queer theology, LMNOP theology. She's pro-abortion. She's anti-capitalist. And she's in favor of, allegedly, of women's ordination. And so he wrote an introduction to her book. So that kind of lets you know where he stands. This guy, Bishop Ayuso Guijot, or Guijot, he is pro human fraternity document, God wills diversity of religions, and he's pro Sister Maria Teresa Forcada, LMNOP activist, nun. Scare quotes.
Now,
welcome to the cardinalate. Here's your red hat, buddy.
Yeah, enjoy.
Join us.
Good times.
What a joke.
This troubled me maybe more than his very nomination by Francis itself was that he was elevated in the last year of Benedict's reign to the deputy of the dicastery in 2012. And again, why him, Holy Father Emeritus Pope Benedict? Well, I mean, we talked about that, I feel, till we're blue in the face, but I don't understand many of these elevations to bishop, archbishop, cardinal, and positions of power in the dicasteries, the congregations. What's a possible excuse why that could happen?
Every year that goes on, you realize that Pope Benedict XVI, people are going to put some, I'm guessing that there'll be 10 thumb downs right now on YouTube. Right, they're just going to fly up as I say this. You realize that Pope Benedict XVI was not the traditionalist that we thought he was.
Yeah.
Aesthetic was more traditional, but the theology was not. And we're seeing that now. And so the men he appointed, the men he elevated, the cardinals, all of that, they were the ones who went forward and brought in. Oh, here comes some thumb downs right there. They're the ones that brought in Pope Francis. It was the Benedict XVI group that brought in Pope Francis. Now, it's true the Sankan Mafia couldn't stand Pope Benedict. That's clear. It's obvious. It's uncontested. However, what was growing in the garden of Pope Benedict was Pope Francis, Amazon Synod, Slim Jim Martin, World Family Meetings, Amoris, all of it.
Well, a two-part papacy, you know, I mean, or whatever you want to call it, you know. Father Ingo Dollinger said that this was a contemplative part and an active part, and that this was an idea of Pope Benedict XVI himself. Now, this has been controverted.
Papal diarchy?
Down. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the fanciest term I've ever heard for it, but I just said sure because that sounds definitely like diarchy.
Sorry, yes. I just like to say it, papal diarchy.
Wait, you mean cool. Diarchy, right?
Yeah,
diarchy.
I mean, it seems very clear that in the first year of Benedict, the first year of his retirement, his resignation, seems very clear. Like when you read Archbishop Ganswein, and Sochi does a pretty decent job talking about this in his new book. Here it is.
Yeah. I'm reading that slowly.
This guy right here.
Yep.
And by the way, I don't agree with this book, but I did read it. I do take it seriously. That it seems that Ratzinger and Ganswein really did kind of believe in a papal diarchy. And since then, they've abandoned it. But it seems early on, something like that's going on. I think they don't use these terms, but here's how I would say that they maybe understood it. This is a maybe. I'm not convinced, but I'm pretty sure. Pope Benedict is a pope, but he's not the pope.
Sure.
He's still a pope, not the pope. I think in the first 2013, 2014, I really do believe that people running around the Vatican thought of it in that way.
Well, and that there's evidence to show that he thought about it that way, and that he might have had expectations from previous to his abdicating the throne, and then during and slightly after his abdication of the throne, he might have had expectations that would have gone in the direction of, hey, you know, I'm a pope still, I'm not the pope, and everyone knows at least a couple of the symptomatic reasons why we would think that he kept the shoes. He still wears the white, and Pope Emeritus is a neologism we had to create for the circumstances.
Right. Yeah. And you know, even Cardinal Brandmuller has said that, you know, this, the taking on of papal identity after the resignation is confusing. It's not
bad
helpful at
faithful.
All. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Benny Plenist. I'm also not a papal diarchist. You know, I don't think Benedict's still the pope. I don't think both of them are still pope. I think Francis is the pope. I've said that repeatedly. I still believe that. It sure doesn't help the church that he wears the white, you know, that he wears the shoes, that he calls himself Papa, that he gives the blessing, all that. It's confusing. It's confusing to the laity.
Maybe people want, I feel like it's worth 30 seconds to stipulate how positive are you? Because I don't think I'm as positive as you are. We've never really talked about it off camera, but it's not something that couldn't happen. I'll say that. I think I said this to Father Dave Nix off the record. I don't believe it's something that couldn't not happen. It's not like the gates of hell prevailing against Rome or anything like that. If you have confusion as to who's Pope, it's happened before.
Absolutely, yeah.
It didn't ruin the church. It could be the case here. I don't personally believe that. One, we don't have the information to make the determination, so you err on the side of procedure. And two, even the kind of speculative information that's out there seems to be over speculative, but it is possible, right? You don't think that would.
Oh yeah, it's possible. I mean, are you saying it's possible that there'd be a diarchy, or is it possible that Benedict is still the Pope?
Well, I'm saying it's possible. Yeah, the diarchy would have to be I mean, it's not valid. We know that with 100% certainty from scripture and tradition and all that. No, I'm just saying, I think there's a possibility following, the testimony of Father Ingo Dollinger, who used to be besties with Pope Benedict, that he'd said he wanted to do this. He was toying with the idea for 10 or 15 years, a kind of diarchy, and he thought it was neato, for lack of a better term, and that this might have fertilized the still mysterious abdication of Pope Benedict. And if that were the case, that would have also fertilized a kind of holistically invalid abdication of the throne, particularly when you stack up the other alleged pieces of evidence, like, and I'm not endorsing them because I don't endorse them. I don't think they meet the preponderance of the evidence claim. I'm just saying I don't think there's a 0% chance. Sunk Gallen Mafia, the canvassing that went on, that Austin Ivory, it went out in like the first edition of his book. There was it was very quickly pulled out of his book that there was actually active canvassing that had happened by the Sunk Gallen members. And that there was active canvassing that became dialogic with Bergoglio, who gave some sort of nod, which would have, according to Pope John Paul II, invalidated the whole proceeding. So you kind of have the working pieces, and again, I'm not endorsing it, to the thesis, both from Benedict and then from the Sunk Gallen people, such as to render the entire process invalid. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I do this in Infiltration. That's why I was pulling it up, the page number, because I entertain it. I say, okay, could this be the case? And in the book, so there's two ways to say that Benedict is still the Pope. One is that he was coerced and he didn't do it willfully. Some kind of a threat against him, his family, other people, terrorist attack, whatever. So that would put into doubt his willful resignation, which would still make him the Pope. The second one is to say there's a defect in his actual resignation, the way he words it. Now, there's a third one. This is kind of Anne Barnhart's deal, where he held to substantial error. He held to papal diarchy, and therefore he could not renounce the papacy. There's a substantial error in it. The problem with that is if he believed that going in, then how could he even accept the papacy properly if he didn't? You see what I'm saying? If there's a substantial error going in, there's a substantial error going out. So I think the only way you can really say Benedict's really the Pope, and I would actually, sit down with a whiskey or a beer with someone and hear him out, is to go on the coercion. But yet I wrote a whole book on could there be coercion, and I still don't think there is. When it comes to the actual resignation, listen to this. This is Pope Benedict. My decision to resign the active ministry does not revoke this. I do not return to private life, to a life of travel, meetings, receptions, conferences, and so on. I am not abandoning the cross, but remaining in a new way at the side of the crucified Lord. I no longer bear the power of office for the governance of the church, but in service of prayer, I remain, so to speak, in the enclosure of St. Peter. So this is the passage that everyone turns to say, see, he's giving up the active ministry but he's retaining a passive ministry or a prayerful ministry. And he remains inside the enclosure of St. Peter. But when you look at his resignation, which is the official document, that was just a general audience, he says this: "For this reason, I am well aware of the seriousness of this act, and with full freedom, I declare and renounce the ministry of Bishop of Rome, successor of St. Peter, entrusted to me on the by the Cardinals on 19th April 2005, in such a way that from 28th February 2013 at 20 hours, the See of Rome, the See of St. Peter, will be vacant, and a conclave to elect the new Supreme Pontiff will be convoked by those whose competence it is." So he specifically states that it will be vacant. I don't see you can say there's a defect in the legal terminology.
Sure.
Of the resignation. See, I think you really have to camp out with a real possibility of coercion, but it's been 6 years now. The man's still alive. And we have no witness, himself or another, who says he's under coercion still.
The problem, though, with striking from any possibility, I guess, thesis number three, as you did, is that the testimony by Ingo Dollinger was that he started toying with it once he was already Pope. So that would have meant he assumed the office, you know, validly, and then he started messing with the idea, tinkering with the idea once he was there. So that would have, I mean, again,
there is some witness that he was playing with a corporate papacy prior to becoming a pope. But again, we're getting into the man's psychology in the history of his theology and trying to invalidate it. So even if you toyed with the idea during your papacy, that doesn't necessarily mean that you hold it.
That's true. That's
it's very true. Difficult to prove the psychology and the inner theologian, a private theologian of the papacy, and then from that deduce probably the most scandalous papal situation, if it were true, way worse than the Avignon papacy and the schism after that. Because at least in those situations, you had bishops, cardinals, and lay people and princes supporting the one true pope. In this case, you would have 100% of the cardinals, including Cardinal Burke, 100% of the bishops, 100% of the priests supporting the man who's not the pope, an anti-pope. I mean, that's just mind-boggling and blowing.
That's the major distinction that does separate this, because people will, you know, you listen to Benny Plenis and they start, you know, I'm trying to be reasonable on this because I could see it happening in the future. It wouldn't absolutely blow my mind. I'd be surprised but not shocked. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, the countervailing evidence is what you just said. They say, oh, this is precedented before. They almost try to talk about it like it's business as usual. It's like, well, no. The Avignon papacy was one extrinsic forces, right? It was geopolitics between the French and the two different groups of Italians. And, you know, that's kind of just crass politics getting in the way of curial administration. That's happened before. It's to be expected. It happened really badly at Avignon. But also, again, you know, the second addenda there is what you just said. It's like, but at Avignon, there are a bunch of faithful that actually knew in their hearts the whole time, or whatever you want to say, intuited, who was really Pope. They're following him as Pope. They were not 100% of the faithful or the episcopate were duped.
Right.
Here, that's that matters. That matters in terms of when you look at magisterial teaching, part of the guarantee of the indefectibility of the offices, all the offices, cardinal, bishop, pope, is that they're not, you know, as long as it's not a teaching ex cathedra that, you know, they can be error sometime, but that 100% of the faithful, 100% of the bishops will not be duped. So this would be a much bigger deal because it would instance precisely that phenomenon.
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, that's where I get back to. This is what I said to Father Nix. I'm like, who knows? You know, I think he kind of agreed. It's like, we can't tell. We don't even know what happens at the conclaves exactly.
Yeah, and it seems to me that all the men going into the 2013 conclave really believed there was a Sedeve Conte, Benedict wasn't the Pope, and they were electing the new one. 100% right. of them believe that, including Burt. Cardinal Burt. So, yeah, I'm going with, I really do believe Francis is the Pope. We're with him, and he is the Pope, and I pray for him every night. And pray the rosary for him, and I fast for him. And the most impressive thing would be a major theological shift, miraculous, from the top down. That's what I'm praying and hoping for. There's a chance.
Gonna take a miracle.
Yeah. a miracle.
So, miracles happen, and that's good.
Yep. Okay, so let's look at a couple more of these guys. The next one is Archbishop Jean-Claude Hollerich, hopefully I'm saying that. He's a Jesuit. He's Archbishop of Luxembourg, appointed by B16. And he's a big supporter of the Amazonian Synod. He's also, I believe, he was or is the president of the European Conference of Bishops, which traditionally meets in St. Gallen. He's anti-populist, doesn't like Bannon, doesn't like Trump. I'm sure he doesn't like, what's the Italian politician we always see over here in America? I'm totally spacing.
Berlusconi?
Huh?
Berlusconi?
No.
The old
populist. No, the one always kissing the rosary. Why can't I remember his name right now?
The new guy?
Yeah, the new guy. Why can't I think
of
his
name? The new populist guy? Yeah, I was just talking about him yesterday. I said he's the new Berlusconi.
But I forget. Apologies to the TNT audience. Our brains have completely melted down on that.
We're throwing around a lot of names.
We are. Here, let's see. Anybody in the comments bringing the... No, no one in the comments. Oh, Salvi.
Salvi.
Yeah, that's it. Salvi. Yeah.
So Space Salvi.
Yes. Exactly. So he's excited about the Amazonian. Yeah, Matteo Salvi. That's who we're thinking of.
That's it.
So we see in him he's pro-Amazonian, he's pro-globalist, he likes the Amazonian face in the church, he's against the European political movement that would stress national sovereignty, borders, etc. Christian identity moving forward.
Yeah.
So you see politically... He's Francis. He's a Francisite.
Yeah, I characterized when we were talking about Zuby, I characterized, and the next guy, I'm forgetting his name, I characterized Islam as the main issue being represented here at this consistory. The major contender for that would be perhaps Francis's very favorite topic, if you average it out over the 7 years he's been Pope, almost 7 years, which is migration, immigration, migrants. And this is why he hates Trump and Bannon, right? Because Trump and Bannon represent national sovereignty. These guys are from the cadre of globalists who say that you're evil and racist and hateful if you believe in borders, which humanity did up until about 5 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's so weird how the global left is so effective, so efficacious at just taking a leitmotif that has run with the soil, has run with humanity for all of our life, our special life, and vilifying it in the space of 1 year, right? The space of 2010. Now you can't make a gay joke anymore. They did that in 2010, 2011. Over the last 4 or 5 years, it's really been, wait, you believe in political boundaries? You believe, look at this political map of all the nations in the world. Do you believe those are real nations? You're like, well, yeah.
And they're like,
well, that makes you that means you're
bad. Racist. You're a white supremacist.
What? What are you talking about?
You're a white supremacist. But
do you believe the border? No, you can believe in the map, but do you believe the borders are real? And you're like, well, they're not. They're not real in like Thusis, but they're real in Nomos. Yes. Like racist jerk. I can't talk to you. You have no place in society. It's wild. They're so effective at it because there are so many sheeple out there.
Yeah. Do you think it relates to the whole trans thing? Like if you can say a male, if I'm now a woman right now, if I just say I'm a woman and I am, you can say, well, I might live 300 miles south of that border, but I'm now a citizen of that nation. I will it. I'm going to walk
it's
in.
It's all nominalism.
It's nominalism. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all it is. There are no real genuses set out by nature. So, sure.
So I self-identify as someone from Luxembourg. Boom.
But you can't do it with race, though. You can't do it. Remember that lady, that white lady that tried to be a black lady? They're like, this is ridiculous. All of a sudden, the left grows, you know, genus receptors, little antennae. Yeah. And they're like, no, that's not your genus. That's not the genus of race you pertain to. It's
There's also the guy who's, it's a man who says he's a Filipino woman or Filipino woman. Have you seen that guy?
Little girl. Yeah. Doesn't he say he's a Filipino like?
No, there's another guy who says a little girl. This guy thinks he's a Filipino woman. Okay. It's just a white guy there with like long hair. And it's like, wow, like, man. Dude,
obviously, you're a woman, but you're not Filipino. Okay?
Well, I think
obviously, see you're a woman, bro.
Maybe it was Steven Crowder or someone like that. This is several years ago, and he went to a college campus and he said, "Okay, you know, how do you feel if this person, if this man says he's a woman?" And all the college students were like, "Yes." Okay, what if he identifies as a race? And like most of them said, "Yes," right? And then he said, what if a 5'6" person identifies as 5'11"? And they're like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
remember great. That?
Yeah. And he was like,
oh, no. He even did ages. But when he got to the height, all the college students like balked. They're like, you can't do that.
That's ridiculous. You can't joking? They didn't even get he was joking until that point. Right. They can't take a joke anymore as the garment tearing pearl clutchers are running around on the left. I love it, obviously, in the last week since the new Chappelle stand-up hit Netflix. And, you know, was talking about this with Pat Coffin yesterday. It's like, dude, the left, they eat their own. And when somebody says, you know what, I don't think I'm on board the nominalism anymore. Maybe, you know, maybe abortion isn't the way, which is essentially what he's saying in this thing. They can't handle it. They melt down and they eat their own. It's quite a world we have here. I mean, it's a funny old world, and it's an interesting time to be a layman or a cardinal or a pope. And we just don't get to write the rules. They do.
We just get to watch them. So, all right, there's another one I wanted to cover, and that's Father Michael Czerny. Michael Czerny. And he's, I think he's Czechoslovakian. I don't see here in my notes, but I think he is. Yeah, he's Czechoslovakian, but a Canadian citizen. And he's SJ. He's a Jesuit. Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise.
SJW.
Yeah, SJW, yeah. And he is the chief advisor to Cardinal Turkson, who you and I have spoken about. I actually think Turkson is in maybe the top five. Do we disagree on that? I can't remember. Do we agree or disagree?
No. Oh no, we agree.
We agree. Turkson, okay.
I've thought for a long time he might be the kind of unspoken front runner. Yeah.
If he's elected, we are going to take this clip from this video and replay it.
Yeah,
I think he's a top runner for the papacy. And here we have Jesuit Father Czerny as his advisor. And he was very much involved in the Youth Synod. Remember where Cardinal Tagle was all hip? You know, he's doing the snaps.
Yeah.
We played that over and over.
Trying to be hip.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it ain't easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I had that video so I could just run it all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't have it ready. I wish I could just cue it on Will.
Yeah, you need it on cue. Like an FM radio shock DJ.
Exactly. That just got roll certain it. Just roll
things on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to get it. And then also he's one of the special secretaries for the Amazonian Synod. So he seems to be a point man for setting up these synods.
Right.
That's his specialty. He's a Jesuit, and he's good at synods. He's a synod man.
He's a synod man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then we also got Archbishop, this is Ignatius Suharo Hard Joat Majo. Hard Joat Majo. Hard Joat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Good job trying to pronounce. Yeah.
Your Eminence, I apologize. But he is Archbishop in Indonesia. I've been to Indonesia. It's very Muslim, but it's not like crazy Muslim. It's kind of more of a lax Islam is what I saw there. Maybe I was in a certain region, but
it's the largest Muslim nation in the world, technically.
I know, but you don't see women wearing like all the heavy veils and all that.
Yeah.
In fact, something interesting I saw there, you know, Muslims can't drink alcohol and they can't eat bacon, two strikes against them, but they can't have alcohol. So what they do in Indonesia, there's this tree that grows these fruits, and the fruits ferment. And the men gather under these trees and just eat the fruit, and they get drunk because there's alcohol in the fruit. It's fermenting. Right? So they're technically not drinking alcohol, but they're getting the substance.
But I guess it's ethanol, though. They are consuming ethanol.
Well, I know, but they're not doing like drinking a beer.
They're not
eating a fruit and getting intoxicated, right?
But I mean, it still should count.
Because I know.
Scientifically,
it counts. But I that was something that went on in Indonesia that I observed, that the Muslims, there's this fruit, and they like to eat the fruit because it ferments.
You saw them doing it like all over the place?
No, I just remember like someone pointing, oh, there's the fruit tree, and there's some guys.
Is there guys just waiting there?
Get a six pack. A six pack is like six fruits, you know?
Yeah. You should have gone up to him like Michael Scott and being like, guys, do you think doing alcohol is cool?
Yeah, do you think doing alcohol?
Do you do alcohol?
Yeah, do you do alcohol?
Because that's against your religion, dog.
Right.
All right.
So he's the president of the Indonesian Bishops Conference. And he's also a member of the Congregation for the Evangelization of the People. So he's there in Jakarta. I think he's probably useful to Pope Francis because Islam. Now, the next one is Archbishop Juan de la Caridad Garcia Rodriguez. He's from Cuba, Havana, Cuba. And he's against capitalism, and he's in favor of, quote, progressing socialism.
Well, he's Cuban. I mean, yeah.
Cubans would know better.
Yeah. You'd expect it.
Yeah.
So, Bishop in 2002, meaning under JP2.
Yeah, under J. He goes back JP2. He's been a bishop since 97. So, let's see. Any other big ones we want to cover here? We covered about half of them.
I mean, the names are like prohibitive alone. I was just going to say with Hart Joat Majo. You notice the way that just rolls off the tongue there. Mm-hmm. With Hart Joat Majo, you said he's a synod guy. He was an attendee of the Synod on New Evangelization under Benedict, and then both synods on the family. So what it appears is that a lot of the invitees of the original, 14, 15 synods, Francis had his people. Yeah, I mean, presumably. Sure. Yeah, I mean, in the audience there, maybe not doing anything important then, but it's like, it's almost like these were like the pupils. And all along, you know, Francis might have, even early in his pontificate, invited the pupils and said, hey, come watch, get a sense of things here. And you might be the guy in 5 years or 6 years.
Well, I'm sure these synods are not just to move forward agenda, but it's also to meet, like you said, pupils. Like, who's in favor of these reforms? Who likes what we're doing? You're hanging out. You're getting to know each other. You're being introduced for the first time. People you like are saying, hey, this guy is someone that we like.
Right.
Let's grease in the machines, you know, and this is probably a way in which people are are scattered out.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like when the high school or the college football coach goes to high schools. That happens in Texas all over here, man. These college football coaches are, you know, they have their scouts and they're just going to Friday night games looking for that player they need, you know, talking to him, talking to his parents. Hey, do you want to come to, you know, Oklahoma State, you know, and that's what's going on.
Yeah, that's how it works. I mean, because there are a lot of bishops in the world. People tend to forget.
Yeah.
thousands of bishops. So it's not like there's 100 bishops in the world, and you know, like there's 100 senators in the U.S. Senate or something, and the president kind of knows at least a rap sheet like what we're reading, except more instructive on each of the 100. I mean, the Pope has no clue about some of the bishops in the world. So,
yeah, never heard of him, yeah.
Never heard of him, couldn't put a face to the name, or would struggle. He might have struggled a year ago to read Hart Moach Joe Moto's name, right?
Right.
I mean, probably he knew him before that, but except the point is, yeah, it's easy as a layperson to get caught up in, you know, hearing bishop. That's a position of power. You know, you're in charge of a see archbishop, but these guys are still maybe no ones in terms of the curial logic and the pontifical purview. So it's worth remembering.
Let's put it in perspective, because you know this better than I do, Tim. How many players are drafted in the NFL every season at the draft? How many come in?
In the NFL draft? 180 or something.
180
like that.
Every year, folks. Yeah. Think about how hard it is to be a professional NFL football player. Right. So 100, you said 180 every year?
Ish. Yeah.
So now think about becoming a Cardinal as like an NFL draft. There's one guy picking him, Francis. We're talking 13 a year. 20 a year. I mean, this is like NFL draft to the nth degree. The amount of vetting. I mean, these are not just like, yeah, I like that guy. Make him a Cardinal. I like that guy. The amount of vetting that goes in on this we need to appreciate that. These are not just sort of shots from the hip.
Right.
No, that's right. As much attention that goes into the NFL draft or NBA or whatever drafts goes into this by a degree of which I don't know what number to put on.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's such a select group. I mean,
yeah.
No one gets in. I mean, to put it in perspective, if you talk about any sport other than pro basketball or pro football, the odds of going from a collegiate level volleyball player to, like, you know, professional volleyball in some league or another is really not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
But the odds of making the funnel to the NBA or the NFL are so stark that even if you're a really skilled player, it's like winning the lottery. I mean, literally, to not just to be a lotto pick, but
it's to make it anywhere. It's based on skill, right?
It's of course. Yeah. It is.
I mean, it's not just random.
It still requires.
Yeah.
I'll quote Steve Nash. Like even the most skilled of us here have had tons of good luck. Mm-hmm. You had to have the right scout at the right couple scouts at the right couple times.
Not get injured.
Not get injured is a huge one, because it's not just training. You have to have good luck to not. Yeah. You have to train really hard and have good luck not to get injured. And you need certain big shots in your career to fall at the right time that you just sometimes that just rattles out, rims out.
Right.
So it's a compatibilist thing. If we're to get into free will versus determinism. It's a mixture of both, and it's still a major stroke of good luck, good fortune to get in. But think about this: to be in a position of power in the church when there's only 30, you know. We're talking about Francis being really, what is this, his fifth consistory?
It is his sixth.
Sixth. So that's really aggressive.
He had one in 14, one in 15, one in 16, one in 17, one in 18, and one in 19. So he does one every year.
And it's typically about this number of cardinals. So, I mean, okay, six. That's a really aggressive pope at emptying out the ranks. But still, you're talking, you know, 90 total new cardinals made in his pontificate, and this is out of several thousand bishops and archbishops in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's made 67 current electors. I mean, he's made more cardinals because of the age, but currently the electors in this new, if we count October, 67 right. are voting right. cardinals, young voting cardinals, active cardinals. Their legacy will be felt for at least another 10, 20 years.
Right, right.
And I'll put it, it's on the screen. So we have 67 by current, 67 by Francis, 42 by Benedict XVI, still a big number, and 19 by John Paul II. That's it. So 67 Francis, 42 B16, 19 JP2. Those are the numbers. And so next year you can count on another 10 probably by Francis. Remember how I thought that Francis would resign? And you were like, oh no, he's staying on. I now agree with you, Tim. I tipped the hat to you. You're right. He's staying.
Thank you.
He ain't going nowhere.
I have to check in with Coffin, because Coffin said this. Coffin was even more certain than you. It's like, no, he's going to resign. I was like, dude, one thing I know, I don't know much, but I know leftists are all Alinskyites. They don't cede power.
Yeah.
So that's
look
one
at,
thing.
Look at Ginsburg.
Yeah, look at Ginsburg. She's hanging on by, I mean, dude, she's had cancer like four or five times.
Yeah.
And she won't leave, because what happens if she leaves? She understands that is a vacuum. You know, vacuum
someone said, means someone chaos. On Twitter said this is cold. This is cold. I wish Benedict XVI had the resolve of Ginsburg.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's cold. What do you mean cold? I think that's right.
It's right. But it's like, wow. If Ginsburg with cancer and all this can fight, I'm not giving up my seat. This is something to fight for, even in the most horrible pain and disease and discouragement. I'm going to fight. And then Benedict says he's stepping down for health reasons, but I mean, he still seems, I haven't heard any reports of cancer. I mean, maybe they're keeping it quiet, but
I said
why does Ginsburg
show.
Fight literally to the death? And then Benedict XVI in the moment of need.
No, I know. I made this point really starkly on an earlier TNT, and it wasn't that long ago. It was, I think, early summer. I was like, dude, Ginsburg, real health reasons, she should be quitting. I mean, it shouldn't even be allowed to be that sick and to maintain your position. But she is like holding on, you know.
Yeah.
RBG is like a, you know, half robot.
A Terminator.
To be able to hold down that. Yeah, Terminator. And then Benedict, I made this point very starkly. Benedict has no ostensible health issues. Now he's old. He's 90 plus. So, of course, yeah, he's not going to be his fittest, but he's still got that sharp mind. And he is the opposite RBG. That's what I said on the show. Right. I don't see an ounce of coldness in it. I just see no, if he's, it's still kind of the eternal question, right? Over 50 years, what is the role of Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI, then Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, whatever that means? Who is this man? Who are you really? What is your role in this era of the church? It's pivotal. That's all we know. Mm-hmm. We know that this guy plays a humongous role in the church. He knows where the bodies are buried. From the council onward, we don't really know what his side he's on. Anytime you think he's a conservative, then he says, "Oh, we're bored with Thomas," and you look at his elevations to the episcopate. Anytime you think he's a liberal, then you find out, well, no, he didn't endorse Francis. That was falsified.
Right.
Well, whatever. You can't figure out this guy, and yet
he's quoting Tejard. He's quoting Balthazar. You know what I mean? Right. He's all over it, you know?
But all we know is he's not, I hate to say it this way, but what we do know is he doesn't have RBG's commitment to any principle left or right. Let me say it that way. That's the more diplomatic way of putting it.
Here come the down thumbs. The down thumbs are coming on YouTube.
Are they actually?
I can always feel that moment when people are going to thumb down the video because they're like, and it's anything, if you don't say Benedict XVI is not a living canonized saint, he made no mistakes, the thumbs come in.
I'm surprised with the TNT crowd that that's the case. But
TNT crowd loves B16. And I love B16 too. I mean, part of my conversion is being at Mass with B16 and being in his presence. So I definitely know that the Holy Ghost has used him, you know, and it's a big part of who I am as a Catholic. But living in 2019 and looking at the puzzle, I just want to put my hand on my head and just, you know, make it go away. It's painful. I can't. Yeah.
No, I came back into the church, or whatever you call it, under B16, and I was joyfully there. I've got his name on my diploma from the Greg, you know, mm-hmm. and I was joyful that his name appears on my diploma from a pontifical university. And I joyfully attended the pontifical masses, he said, for all the students twice a year. It was a real honor. But that was a different day, right? That was before the light of morning had hit yet. And now we're seeing things more clearly, still not clearly, but more clearly. And there have been a lot of developments from, I mean, if I could compare this mind here to my mind when I was walking around the streets of, you know, Via Gregorio and getting hit by Vespas there in Rome in 2007, 2008, I just know so much more. That's the way, you know, the wheels of history only move one way. And, it has not been a toward development for Pope Benedict. It has been an untoward set of developments for Pope Benedict in my mind.
Yeah.
Wish it weren't so. Say it ain't so.
Say it ain't so, but it is. And this will be, I mean, looking back, you know, if our Lord doesn't return 100 years, looking back, the church historians will be writing on this epic. And hopefully something comes out. Like we've always said, B16 knows where all the bodies are buried. The only person on earth right now who could really clarify the situation and help us all understand what's going on in the Catholic Church is Pope Benedict XVI. He did respond. He did respond recently. And in fact, I was thinking we might do our show on that today, but then the new cardinals came out. He did respond to a criticism of, remember the document that he released on that came out at the Synod, and we did a show on that?
Yeah.
Someone criticized him, and he criticized back, and he basically just said they ignored everything I said about God, which is true. But there wasn't too much
pushback.
Yeah, too much pushback, too much interesting. But I wish he would write a document like that and be more explicit on the past 6 years.
Oh, yeah. Who knows what he is even at liberty to say? Mm-hmm. Is he the last known reader of the Third Secret of Fatima that's alive? A student asked me that the other day, and I thought,
they say that the Third Secret's been released.
Well, okay. Is he 3B. The last one? Is he the last one that had his eyes on?
On three,
the Third Secret,
what we call 3B.
Qua the Third Secret, or yeah, whatever, 3B. Whatever the full extent is, 3B. Yeah. Is he the last one
part,
that actually saw?
The written
saw
part. Yeah. I don't know. I know he is one of the latter ones. I don't know if he is the last.
Yeah. Well, it's an old thing. I mean, he's an old guy. And the
my current belief is that it's been destroyed and disappeared. It's not in existence. That's my current belief.
Really? You don't think it's in...
No, I think 3B's gone forever.
Why do you think that? What evidence? Well, that's a whole other show, I guess. We haven't
talked about infiltration. There's a section in Infiltration where I talk about 3B and what happened.
Yeah,
to
no,
it.
I know.
And
I read that section.
I rely primarily on the testimony of, who is it? I can't remember which cardinal, but a cardinal talks about it being placed into oblivion.
Not Villanova, but it was a guy with a name like that.
I think it's
the secretary.
I think it's a Taviani.
23rd.
Yeah,
Taviani said it was destroyed. I thought it was a personal secretary to,
I don't know,
to John the 23rd. Yeah, I read that section of your book to my class because we open up with Fatima every year, and I was thinking, someone would have had to have destroyed it if it's the case.
Well, that's cool. So you read the book to the class.
I read the 3B section.
There's a school somewhere out in California, I can't recall the name, that bought that book for all their high school students. They're going through it at the high school.
Wow.
I was like, is that Tim's school?
I'm a diocesan school.
Infiltration is a high school textbook now at some school.
that you should send that to find out what school it is and send it to those guys, you know, your critics there,
yeah.
And be like, I'm a textbook writer, bro. Yeah. No, it's legit. Anyway, it's off topic, but
yeah. Well, man, I think there is. I mean, these guys are in. You know, nothing we can do about it. This is not a democracy. It is a divinely appointed monarchy, and God is still in charge. He, of course, allows, with his permissive will, using the proper term, using his permissive will, he allows humans to make mistakes, and he's allowed the Catholic Church to get into some real big problems. You know, Jerome, the world groaned to find itself Arian.
Yeah.
I want to say I wake up every morning and I groan to find the church more and more modernist.
World groans to find itself. I think the shibboleth should be universalist, modernist.
Yeah, more and more I think the shibboleth is, do you believe in hell? Is everybody saved? And then even also,
that's what I'm saying.
Do you believe demons are fallen personal angels? That's another great revealer. You know, did you see the video that I did with Faith Goldie on the Satanic Mass?
Yeah, I did.
She was there.
I watched part of it. I didn't.
She was there, and the priest didn't mention it. And she said to him, "Well, do you even believe in hell?" And he goes, "I believe in heaven." And she's like, "You better answer the question right now."
Well, he did. He just did.
Yeah, I know.
He believed. That's an answer.
Yeah.
So one find before we close here that I made that I think is rather inferential with the little dust up we got in with Brandon Vaught and Bishop Barron about, like, you know, they're always dodging the question. Bishop Barron's not a universalist, and he has all his rhetoric lined up. I was re-looking last night at what that little statement they released after, I think, our last show on the topic.
Yeah, they released it after our show within an hour. People are like, have you seen this FAQ? It came up right then. It's a response to the show we did.
Check this out. This is, yes, it was. This is, and we haven't taken it back up since then. I think you could read that document 50 times, and unless you're in the right frame of mind, I just happened to get lucky because I was talking to my buddy on a run. I was talking on the phone, and we're discussing it.
That's hard to do. You run like this with the phone?
No. I use this.
Oh, you got the pods.
I got the pods. Okay. Yeah, and when I exercise, my mind gets real sharp. The alacrity
mine does too.
Goes up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets, well, it's your circulation. It's your endorphins. It's everything. So I think a lot. I have a lot of writing ideas when I lift weights and run. Anyway, so there is an admission in that statement. I should make you read it and just go, and then okay. We can text afterwards. But I want to say it on the air, actually. There's an admission, and it has to do with the Fatima prayer. He always says, like, I'm not a universalist, right? You know, I'm not even a quasi-universalist. His interpretation of that somewhat curious line in the Fatima prayer, lead all souls to heaven, which, you know, always stuck out a little bit to me, probably to you too, but I always just figured, hey, this means all souls for whom the particular judgment has not happened yet.
Yeah, well, living souls. Yeah.
Living souls. They haven't been particularized yet. He says with that, he goes into it and he basically, I don't have the text in front of me, but he basically admits that he believes, well, even the Fatima prayer, sounds universalist. So he's imputing to Our Lady something heretical, which is bad. And in other places where he kind of has his dukes up defending against outright universalism, he plays the Balthazarian, it's just a hope game. He's not actually just hoping that. Go reread that statement and look at everyone out there. Look at what he says about the Fatima prayer. It is the closest thing to admission you'll ever find.
Yeah. And, you know, not a lot of people are saying, well, why are you always, you know, go one after Barron or whatnot. Look, a month ago, I kindly invited Bishop Barron to a conversation. Kindly. And within, I don't know how long, it was deleted. I invited him on Facebook. You know, let me pull it up here. Here you go. There. Here it is. You can't see it, Tim, but it says, this is the invite. Your Excellency, Timothy Gordon and I would like to invite you for a friendly interview to discuss the Dare We Hope theology of von Balthasar regarding the hope for an empty hell. We'd be happy to host it or do it on your channel or through a third party or as a live event. Please let us know, yes or no, via email, and then I share my email.
That's very friendly.
I thought, this was
it's wild. It's very friendly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he deleted it, or someone on his team deleted it. There is no response. Right. There is no yes or no. It's just delete, no engagement.
Really?
It is. So people, you know, everyone on Twitter and in the, like, why don't you invite Baron? Why don't you invite Baron? Let's settle this out in a calm, rational, theological way. I agree. Let's do it. He's been invited. It's been deleted. There's nothing more I can do about it. The invite has been issued. It's been
not. And you've been pre-blocked by Vought. I had some nice words with Vought on Twitter afterwards, but they were, I think, empty, unfortunately. He was saying, hey, I respect you, man, and blah, blah. I was like, yeah, like, likewise. Can we just, why can't, and this goes for everyone that disagrees on Catholic Twitter. Why can't we disagree? It doesn't mean just go separate ways. Why can't we disagree, come together, have real dialogue, a contest of ideas, figure out who's right, and then shake hands afterwards like kids meeting in the schoolyard. It doesn't even have to get that ugly, but you duke it out, and then you see whose ideas are superior, and you say, you're right, you convinced me. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, even in the first ecumenical council in Nicaea, the majority were, you know, as they came, they still let Arius take the floor.
Right.
They're like, okay, let's hear it out. Now, it's true, according to legend, Nicholas got up and slugged him one, according to the legend. But, I mean, there is still the idea of, okay, well, let's hear it out, you know? Like, let's actually have, as I always want to say, let's dialogue, you know?
Right.
Okay, well, let's discuss it. You know, let's go through every single Bible verse for and against. What does Balthasar really say? Let's go through the passages of Balthasar. What is the Fatima prayer? What does it mean? Let's
and
go
what
through
are
it.
You saying about the yeah. Fatima prayer? What am I
let's
saying?
Let's look
what are we
at
saying about
the
that?
Portuguese. Let's break it down. Like, let's do some real theology. The truth will set you free. Let's do it.
Right.
What's there to lose? You know?
We're doing our part.
I'll tell you what there is to lose. Souls.
Yeah.
I don't dare hope that everyone is saved. I am concerned that I may not be saved. Right? I had a Protestant say, yeah. Do you think I'm going to hell? Like, kind of the Ben Shapiro moment. I was like, look, as Catholics, I'm not even sure that I'm going to heaven. Right? Narrow is the way. Right. Still got, you know, unless I get hit by a truck, I still have many more years to go. That's why I pray, lead us not into temptation. That's why I pray the rosary. That's why I go to confession as often as I can, every 2 weeks, at least once a month. Hell is real. Hell is on the table. It's an option. So is heaven. We must take up the cross and follow. I really think that's the historic Catholic teaching. It's not the new teaching. It's not the Nouvelle Théologie. That's not what Thomas Aquinas would have identified with. That's not what Augustine or Saint Gregory the Great or Gregory Nazianzus, any of these guys, I don't think they would have related to this new message, this Nouvelle Théologie.
Well, Baron knows that, right? At the beginning of his treatment, he says, well, what about Augustine's Massa Damnata thesis? And it's like, okay, thesis, it comes right from the Gospels. But he acknowledges, in other words, that he is against Augustine. Then he acknowledges right after that he's against Thomas. It's like, okay, time out. I'm calling a time. If you're against both Augustine and Thomas, it's, you know, that's the end there. You know, Thomas right. and Augustine, where one of them doesn't have a peccadillo or something, where it's an area mm-hmm. that they both agree, the two greatest minds of all time. Come on. Did you really think you're going to outsmart Augustine and Thomas? And then you stack up all the obvious biblical testimony and all the obvious other saints and all the obvious, all the indefectible teachings of the church. It's just, it's a turd. It's not even an interesting intellectual yeah. issue, which is why we're trying to be charitable by even having dialogue on it. It's so boring to talk about because it's so obvious. Some of these issues now that people want to dialogue on, it's like, dude, fine. I'll dialogue on you on whether 2 and 2 is 4 for an hour with you if I can convert you, because it's, you're my Christian brother and it's worth doing. But this is not fun for me, right?
Yeah.
I like academic Catholic philosophy. I like doing open questions that need legitimate, with a lacunae that need legitimate investigation. This is me doing this for you, bro. You know, this is us trying to be good Christians and dialogue with you so you can learn. But this is 2 and 2 are 4. It's like Matt Damon says on Good Will Hunting. He's like, this is not fun for me. This is obvious here, right? This is doing algebra 1.
Right.
Yes, there's a hell. It's 100% certain. I'm 100% certain these other people who deny it are wrong. I want them to be okay, and I don't want them to be teaching error.
Yeah.
But don't make a mistake. This is not us debating minutiae in the natural law for fun, because guys like us like that stuff. This is this is obvious.
Yeah,
obtuse.
If someone, it doesn't matter what his name is, but in this case his name is Bishop Barron. Bishop Barron says Augustine and Thomas were wrong on this issue. Balthazar was right. It's in print right here. It's in the foreword of this book. I already read it once. Then that has to be justified. You know, I mean, here it is. Without ever embracing Origen's apokatastasis panton, Balthazar affected a sort of origenizing of Augustine, a nuancing of the Massa Damnata theology that by the early 20th century was found increasingly incredible and indeed unscriptural. You know, and then the next paragraph, he criticizes Thomas Aquinas on this issue. So, you know, this is in Balthazar's Dare We Hope. And the foreword is written by Father Robert Barron. And he writes that in there. So
we repeat the invitation. Please come on.
Invitation's open. It will be friendly. It will not be, you know, booyah or anything like that. We want to go through every single passage.
I don't think they believe that. It will be 100% friendly. Yes. Well, I even maybe squeeze some laughs in there. It doesn't.
He will be.
When you disagree with someone, it doesn't make you enemies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. He is. He's our father. He's my archbishop. He's under my. I'm in the same archdiocese as he is. So yes, he's literally one of my fathers. Yeah. I just want to dialogue about this because it matters, but it doesn't make us enemies. We're all on the same team. We're all on the same side.
I don't know if we are. That's why I want to have this conversation. Maybe we're not on the same team.
Honest error doesn't mean you're on the opposite team. The only thing that makes someone on the opposite team is willful blindness, willful error. And I don't want to make you fall into rash judgment if you're like, that guy disagrees with me. He must be part of some dark cabal. It's like, I'm going to presume that he legitimately just got hooked into this, you know, hoodwinking theology.
It was the 80s, man. People got into Balthazar. It was the 80s.
That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah. You got caught up in the glitz and the glamour of this Balthazar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, man, Hans Kuhn is crazy. Let's run over to Balthazar for some refuge. That's what happened in the 80s. So anyway, yeah, invite's still out there. I'd love for it to happen. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
So, people, I think, would love for it to happen. It's not just you. I think people would really benefit by it.
Yeah. And again, it can be third party. It doesn't have to be here, there, whatever.
And Vaught can come too. So it's
Vaught. He can ride shotgun. Vaught, you're invited. Brandon Vaught. Or anyone on the Word on Fire team. Father Steve.
Same thing. I think these are good dudes. We just need to somehow. The only way we can come together is by coming together to disagree. Any other coming together, when people say, let's agree to disagree and just walk away, it means, okay, we're just never going to talk to each other again. And the second we're walking away, we're going to be like, that guy's crazy. Both parties are going to be like, that guy's crazy. The only way you truly work it out is let's come together, let the best man win. Do people say this anymore? Ever? Let the best man win?
Everyone gets a juice box after the game and everybody's a winner. That's the problem.
That is.
Again, and it's not like, you know, win the debate. Ultimately, there are millions of people in the Catholic Church who are confused on this question.
Right.
And the number one advocate of it in the public space is Bishop Barron. So I just, You know, and maybe he just says, okay, it's, I'm not, I don't want to direct, I think it'd be great if we would dialogue and debate it and discuss it. Maybe he needs to just do a better job of point by point going through all the verses and the passages, because more and more people are waking up and they're realizing, yeah, Alphonsus Liguori wouldn't have agreed with this. None of the Thomists would have agreed with this. Thomas obviously doesn't. He admits it. Augustine, the Eastern Fathers. I mean, yeah, you can pull maybe St. Isaac the Syrian out, but what about the other 1,000 Eastern Fathers? You know? Anyway, we'll just wrap it up there. Nothing more needs to be the invite's out there. We'd love to do it. All right. Okay. So congratulations. So the Gordons, the new baby. Thanks. Praying for the baby. Looking forward to the baptism of the new baby. We want pictures.
Today.
Baptism. Today.
Today.
Oh.
Today, yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Got it done. Yeah.
What,
yeah.
You already did it?
Done fast. No. Oh, 3:30.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay, everybody today, 3:30 praying. You know, I heard St. Francis of Assisi would genuflect every time he saw someone baptized because the presence of the Trinity became manifest right there. It's pretty cool.
And beautiful. Beautiful. Well, think of me.
Awesome. Yeah. So y'all got the baptismal gown and everything ready to go.
No, we don't even. This is the earliest we've ever done it. Okay. You know, you're reminding me to try to do it in the first 8 days, mm-hmm. and it's darn toot, and that's the right way. So
get it done.
I've never done it in the first 8 days though. So we don't have anything ready. I just grabbed one of the few faithful priests in town, and we're going over there.
Nice.
3:30.
All right. Well, everyone, pray for the Gordon baby. Miriam getting baptized, and that's exciting.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Yeah, thanks for all your prayers and yours too, Taylor. Yeah. Made a big deal. Most likes of anything I've ever tweeted was just saying thank you for all these prayers.
Yeah.
Steph was scared for the C-section. She's tough, but C-sections are intense.
She's had many. All of them have been C-sections.
All six kids, 5 C-sections. So and the only one that wasn't was a twin C-section. So.
Wow. All right. Well, let's close. Oh, we didn't do a Latin word. Or did we do a Latin word? We did non natus. That's baptized. Not born. It's a good Latin word. You got one? We've done cardinal before. Nothing comes to mind.
Conclave.
Oh, yeah. Conclave. That's a great one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. With the keys. Yeah.
Yeah. With the keys. So they're under, they're locked in. It used to be. So, you know where Pope Francis lives, Santa Marta, that's kind of the hotel for the conclaves. It used to be that they were in non-air conditioned rooms and they couldn't leave. They were under silence. It was really kind of they made it a little bit miserable so they would hurry up and make the vote. They wouldn't just be on vacation for weeks. They'd be like, we don't have air conditioning. We don't have good food. We're just stuck. Literally behind, you know, under the keys, conclave, locked in until they come out with the vote. So, yeah, it's a good one. The conclave. All right, well, let's close out our prayer. Put it on the screen. And we'll do the Hail Mary. And I'm gonna say that we all pray this Hail Mary for little Miriam. She's named after the Blessed Mother, right?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Sir.
Miriam Josephine. It's Mary and Joseph, right?
Yep. Holy Family.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we're going to all pray this Ave Maria for little Miriam, that she never stains her baptismal wedding garment. She's a great saint in the church. And we'll also pray the Glory Be in praise of God for her baptism in the Holy Trinity. Nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Ave Maria. Gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus, et benedictus fructus ventris tui, Iesus. Sancta Maria, Mater Dei, or pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc et hora mortis nostrae. Amen.
Amen.
Gloria Patri, et Filio, et Spiritui Sancto, sicut erat in principio, et nunc et semper, et in saecula saeculorum. Amen. Our Lady, Mother of God, pray for us.
Pray for us.
Saint Joseph, pray for us.
Pray for us.
Everybody pray for Miriam Josephine Gordon. He's being baptized at 3:00 today. Amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing. All right. Everybody subscribe, like the video, go on Facebook right now and share this video, share it on Twitter, help support on Patreon. I'll send you some signed autographed books. You can visit Patreon/ Dr. Taylor Marshall, Dr. Taylor Marshall, to learn more. And if you want to join the New St. Thomas Institute and get on the waiting list, that's at newstthomas.com. Till next time, God bless and peace.